Welcome to another episode of the Examine Life podcast, where we take some of life's thorniest questions and deconstruct them in a way that is pragmatic and philosophical so that you can lead a more productive, examined, and joyful life. My name is Kei. Today's question is, how do you come up with business ideas? And I'm joined by my friend, Steph Smith. How's it going, Steph?
Hello. It's so good to be here. Good to see you again.
I know. It's been like we got to meet up. I guess I was a year and change ago and did an online course together. So it's fun to have you here.
Yeah. I know it's exciting when you see someone like a digital friend, an online friend, but who you've actually met in real life. I'm like, oh, I know you in like, I like to say meet space. It sounds, some people find that crude, but it's like, I've seen Kei in real life.
Yes, yes. And I've served with your husband. So
yes,
I've met him in the meet space too. So awesome. Well, tell us, you know, I was actually looking at your LinkedIn before we joined. I was like, how do we frame Steph's career? Because in my mind, you have the most internet-y, we have a big age gap, but I feel like I grew up on the internet, like 28.8 modem, news groups, Usenet, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're the I guess, younger, you're Gen Z or younger millennial.
I'm millennial. Yeah, some people, by the way, how old do you think I am? This is a fun question because most people guess wrong.
This is going to put me on the spot. I would say you're 29.
I'm 30. So very close.
Okay.
But it's funny because some people, I don't know, just visually think I look a lot younger. They think I'm like 22. And when I was 22, people thought I was like 14. And so that's been like a reoccurring theme. So sometimes when people are like, oh, you're like Gen Z, I'm like, how old do you think I am?
Well, I think this does tie into this podcast because to me, you're very internet native, which I guess will always make someone present younger.
Sure.
Like people think I'm younger because I can tell you about the latest viral TikTok dance.
Yeah.
And like maybe like that won't change my physical appearance, but like I'm in the know. I know
stuff.
Yeah,
you don't sign off on text messages with your name, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Oh my God. Yeah. What I love about you have the most unique, like it looks so meandering from
it
afar.
Is.
And we have, our listeners are a little more, no offense, listeners, a little bit more uptight, rigid. They take a more conventional path. So I don't know, like, how do you, I looked at your LinkedIn and I was like, how many quote unquote real jobs has Steph had? And I saw Toptal, I might be pronouncing it wrong, HubSpot, The Hustle, and A16Z. Those look like traditional container jobs.
Yeah, I know. I'll add one. I did consulting for a year. So you're right. I've had five, like, real life post-college jobs.
Got it. And the reason why I find it so hard is because I see you as this kind of person that's just kind of always creating stuff on the internet. And so talk about your career path and the role of kind of side projects through it all.
Yeah. I mean, first to address the whole like growing up with the internet, you're absolutely right. I was born in 1993. So when you think about it, I was born right around the time that the internet was just beginning, and then obviously the bubble in 2000. But really, like, that era was my childhood, right? I lived alongside MSN and a lot of these sites like Yahoo, just getting started and becoming big. And then all of these newer tools or companies that are very familiar, like Google or Amazon or Wikipedia or Reddit, those all came to be when I was growing up as well. So I do feel like my generation, I kind of grew up with the internet. And I think that maybe did play a role in how I see the world, because you know how people say today, they look at these teenagers on TikTok and they're like, wow, everyone looks so good, right? And one of the reasons all these teenagers look so good is because they can see all of the trends that fellow teenagers are doing, right? Like not just in your high school hallway at lunch, they can see across the whole country or across the whole world what trends exist and how to, you know, and some people think this is a bad trend, but they can basically see past their immediate bubble in ways that they couldn't before. And I think the same thing happened to me, not so much in like fashion internet trends, but just internet trends to allow me to see what else was out there. And so when I went to college, I was, you know, immersed in the internet, but not maybe as deeply as today. So I went the traditional route. I did chemical engineering in college, and then after that went into consulting. But at that time, me and a friend were like, there just must be something better out there. And she sent me this thing called Remote Year, which is like, I think one of the earliest examples of where people were nomadic in groups. And it was this program where you would spend 1 month in a different country. You'd spend a month in every single country. What am I saying? You would go to a different country once a month with the same group for a year. Mm. And basically,
independent of the job. Like you'd keep the same
so
job.
Yeah, so you have your own job as you did this. This was in 2015 when I discovered it. And I think they started around that time. Point being, that was like a very new concept, but also one that I only could have found out about through the internet. Mm. And so that was like an unlock for me where, you know, fast forward, every single other opportunity has come to me through the internet, right? Like actually, you know, even the Hustle happened because I started writing online. And then Sam, who owned the company and founded the company, reached out and was like, I've read a bunch of your articles. Like, will you work for me? Right. Same thing happened with A16Z is like, I think they just saw my work elsewhere. And that ended up with me in a role. So in a way, it's meandery, partially because of my curiosity. But I would also say because I'm putting enough things out there just through my tinkering. And, you know, your original question was around side projects, that like those side projects in a way work for me while I'm sleeping, right? Just by like getting shared or doing their work online, so that these different sprouts appear. And some of them aren't a fit, most of them aren't a fit. But every so often, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that myself. And so in a way, like, you're absolutely correct that my career path has been meandery and strange. But that's because the internet has like introduced those opportunities to me.
Yeah.
Instead of me, the same way, like, the high school version of me didn't know how to look as cool as the high school versions of Gen Zers today, because I just didn't know that much. I think the same thing applied to my career, where it's like, if I had only relied on my own intuition, I would have had a much more limited view of what could happen. But instead, the internet kind of surfaced these opportunities for me.
Wow. And so I actually wanted to ask you about the A16Z thing. So for those who are living under a rock and don't know, A16Z is one of the largest venture capital firms in the world, Andreessen Horowitz. And Steph joined as, it says author, but you host their podcast, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't know why it says author, but yes, I host their podcast on, it's called the A16Z podcast.
Got it. Did you have to submit a resume for that?
I don't know how much they'd want me to share about the kind of hiring process. However, I would say that it wasn't like the traditional process of like showing all of the different, you know, let's say the decade of work I had done in podcasting, because I hadn't, and actually most people hadn't. You could say the role itself was a product of the internet as well. If you think about, you know, these jobs that a decade ago just didn't exist, you wouldn't find them. I think podcast host is one of those, and I'm actually really excited to see what other ones exist. But coming back to your question about a resume, I don't remember if I submitted one, but I don't think that was nearly as fundamental as I think people previously treated them.
Yeah. And I want to pause and just reflect back to you and the listeners. Like, that's so fucking awesome that, you know, you are working at one of the most prestigious venture capital firms in the world, probably the hottest venture firm right now. I don't know where they stack in the rankings. Doing a job that didn't exist, you know, five years ago, without a traditional recruiting process, let's put it that. Like, that is, to me, I have goosebumps just thinking about that. I'm like, that is so cool that is even possible. And I think some people would be like, oh, you know, that's, you'll get like some random job at some random tech company that no one's ever heard of, like, through this, what we're calling meandering process. But no, this is fucking A16Z, the biggest VC in the world right now. So I just want to say, hey, that's so cool. And I want to reflect that back to you and our listeners.
Thanks. And yeah, I feel very lucky. And I should say, like, they definitely did their diligence. I guess I'm just saying that the resume as like the, in the past, if you think about it, it was like one of the only signifiers of whether someone could do a job. when you are treated with a new kind of role, like you can't just think about a resume, right? Because, you know, it's kind of like that joke where people are like, I'm looking for a developer with 10 years of experience in X. And it's like, that framework was actually only developed a year ago, right?
Yeah.
And so I think what's very exciting, even just outside of the A16Z context, is because we are in this era where new jobs are being created, I would say much faster than 30 years ago, that people are going to have to come up with new ways of vetting people. And I think one obvious one that I'm already seeing a lot of and I'm personally excited about is just the idea of people doing assessments, which sounds very simplistic, but how crazy is it when you really think about it that in the past, we would just ask people if they could do something instead of asking them to show that they could do it, right? Like think about what interviews are. I mean, they're much more than, you know, asking someone about hard skills, but like, think about the type of person that comes through that kind of interview process is someone who's like hyper confident, maybe overconfident in their skills, and who's just confident in saying that they can do something, versus if you just give someone an assessment, you can gauge that very quickly. And you can gauge not only if they like pass or fail, but the gray areas, the how they do it, how quickly they do it, how they like send you their assessment. Is it formatted nicely or are they cutting corners, right? You can just like notice all of these little things that you don't pick up on. So anyway, that was kind of a tangent, but I actually think that the way that we're all being assessed is changing.
It's funny, a side anecdote on the assessment part. We hire a bunch of international contractors and they do like little roles like making video clips and things like that. But we even have an assessment built into the application process. So somewhere in the application process, it will say, mention the job name in the subject line and then put the word, you know, raspberry. I'm just making it up. And 80% of the people don't put in the word raspberry.
The simplest thing.
We just discard them. And it's like it's like, if you can't put that word in, you're going to fuck something up in our process.
Right.
So it's like, that's not what you meant by assessment, but it just reminded me of that.
No, I mean, it kind of is though, because there are so many little things where like, most people, when you ask them to do an assessment, are just like mass applying to jobs and they're like, let me show you the bare minimum. And every so often you get people who not only do your assessment well, but they almost like surprise you. You're like, I didn't ask you to format it in our brand colors, but you did. And I also didn't ask you to take it this extra step, but you did. And actually, like, you did this assessment better than I imagined when I designed it. And those are always like things that you just absolutely could not ascertain from an interview.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. All right, so we're going to dig into our question today. But before we dig into our question, if you are actually looking to lead an unconventional career, or you're looking to blaze a path that is less traveled or not known, we actually have a group coaching cohort that does just that, serving post-achievement professionals like yourselves. Check out radreads.co/coaching. All right, so Steph, today our question is, how do you come up with business ideas? And again, I've watched you from afar, I guess, for a decade now, probably, just churn out these little projects, side projects, watch you code, watch you host podcasts, and just try so many things. And so here's how I frame the conversation. I know that people listening are creative. They want to start things. They kind of see what's happening on the internet. They're probably a little bit, you know, less advanced, so to speak. But I think that one of the ways that I've found that many people get stuck who are listening is that they have some idea, and it's like this singular idea. It's like, oh, I must make a new pair of gym shorts, right? And it's like they go and then they like research gym shorts until they're blue in the face. They like write themselves a business plan and then they think about, you know, who might be a VC that could fund, like who might invest in them, who will give them capital, who will be a co-founder. And it's just this kind of, and we talked about this with Noah Kagan a bit, but it's just this kind of, it's done in complete isolation, so to speak. And it's not done with a ton of, it's not done with a ton of data. And so I'd love for you to just kind of kick us off with, like, when you have a whiff of an idea, and I've got some ideas that we could spitball with this, but when you come up with a whiff of an idea, because you said you have more ideas than you know what to do with, which is not typical. Most people are idea poor, but you're kind of idea abundant. And so you have maybe a simpler question. how do you come up with ideas?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. And I think what you're referencing is in, so my latest project, Internet Pipes, the intro video talks about, yeah, this idea where I, for a long time, was opportunistically poor. And what I meant by that is really just like, as I mentioned before, I started my work career going into a very traditional college and then like a very traditional job after college. And I just didn't really know what else was out there at first. And then in addition to that, like once I got into tech, it still took me a while to realize that, oh, there's this whole world of like creating my own projects. And by the way, I grew up watching things like Shark Tank or Dragon's Den. And I think a lot of people do too. But to your point, it's just like so hard for them to like, to see the world of opportunity out there. And this is by no means me saying like, oh, go like quit your jobs and like, you're, you know, get rich quick or anything like that. But it's more so just once you start realizing what resources are online, you can actually like have this much richer sense of like what people actually want. And over time, as you get more equipped with those things, which we can go into, all of a sudden, like you said, it's like you go from feeling like you have no ideas or maybe one idea worth pursuing to just being like, oh my gosh, there's like endless things I could do. And actually it's worth pursuing many of those at the MVP stage because, you know, the same way that people talk about a startup's all about experimenting and testing and not shipping, like, you know, there's that saying where they're like, oh, if your product doesn't break, like you've shipped too late or something like that. Yeah. And so you can treat your own life in a similar way. Hopefully you're not breaking anything, but the idea is that like instead of waiting until you have the perfect job that you've like manifested and like written the perfect resume for, or instead of like you said, creating a business model for 3 years and then hoping that the market likes it, there's actually like probably hundreds of mini steps that you could take along the way. And I think one very significant thing that unlocked this viewpoint for me sounds really simple, but it was through my exposure to SEO, which is search engine optimization. And that just basically has to do with Google is the biggest website in the world. And every day there are billions of people, literally billions of people who use the internet and are searching and are telling Google what they want, what they're confused about, what they're planning to buy, you know, what they've forgotten, what they're scared of. Like it's just every little piece of their lives. And the exciting part about that is like, if you do have an inkling, you can use some of the tools that now exist. You know, if you think about like, we're a couple decades into the internet. Well, now that these sites like Google or Reddit or Wikipedia or Amazon or TikTok are big enough, not only do they exist, but we have this like suite of tools on top of them, which helps us make sense of that data set. And so now, like I use Google as one example, but all of those different sites have tools that allow us to see what people really want, are buying, et cetera. And so to me, that's exciting because, again, that doesn't mean you're going to go build a successful business, but it does help you kind of better intuit what people really want. So when you do come up with an idea or you are exposed to things, then all of a sudden you have the tools to be like, oh, should I just go off my intuition or should I actually like get a head start and actually see, is this something people really want?
Yeah. And I want to call out how you said this isn't a get-rich-quick scheme.
Yeah.
In fact, it's almost the opposite. And if you kind of look at your career, I think of you as very entrepreneurial, as an entrepreneur. And you are an entrepreneur. And at the same time, you have a job at a traditional firm, right? And so they're not these, and I think it shows the power of these projects that, you know, lead to jobs. Maybe I could see you at some point in your career going off and being an entrepreneur where that's like you focus on one business, right? And you hire people and so on. And it's just, that's part of that kind of meandering career path. And so I want to call that out.
Yeah. And that's partially by design, as in I've kept a job for the last decade or so, not because I've been forced to, but because, well, one, I think you learn a lot. So I'm not going to underweight the jobs I've had have been wonderful. And I feel like that's certainly a draw that I'm still learning there. But it's also so that like when you have a level of financial stability in something that you hopefully enjoy, then everything else you can just truly explore. I think that's also something that's underrated, right? You take some of the tools, you know, whether it's like SimilarWeb or some of the SEO tools or like Jungle Scout for Amazon, like all of these tools give you data. And I think there's often like too often the reaction of like, okay, now like I'm going to take this and I'm going to run with it. Like I'm going to, you know, this is my next business idea. And that's fine if people want to create businesses using some of these tools. Obviously, they should know that that's like not an automatic, you know, key to success. But I also think what's underrated about these tools is that they just like help you understand this like collective that we all are of billions of people. And to me, that's honestly even more interesting. Like people are always like, where do you find the stuff you share on Twitter or that you talk about on podcasts? Or like, I feel like your brain is interesting. And I'm like, well, honestly, it's just because like, it's no longer just my brain. I know that sounds very strange, but it's like, I'm no longer just like waking up, talking to a circle of three friends, going to bed and doing that every day. Like, I feel like I'm very plugged in to not just what I think, but what the masses think through these tools. And to me, that's exciting because then I like learn about things that, you know, maybe I don't care about this niche subreddit, but like, it's kind of interesting that I know it's like super big and, you know, a lot of people are having interesting conversations there. So I think that's underrated. It is, again, just like using this data for interest, not necessarily for like direct opportunity.
Yeah. And I think you point out this fascinating observation that I think many of our listeners, it's lost on them, is that you said every day millions of people are telling Google, amongst other places, what they're interested in, right? I mean, isn't there that joke where you're like, how
Google
do I,
you
start
better.
In Google.
yeah. Then you know yourself.
It's like, how do I, and then you like watch it fill in the blank. It's like, how do I change my oil? How do I do this? Yeah. It's like, and so I guess, so you mentioned Google. And so if someone has a question, all right, can we run through an example that I have, something that I've been thinking about often? So people often come to me, like I do coaching, we have group coaching, but we're extremely capacity constrained and we're very high price point. So it's just not for everyone. And so people then say, well, sorry, you know, you're capacity full or you're too expensive for me. How do I find a coach? Right. So it's like a very kind of common question. It's like, how do I find a coach? And I've gotten that question so much that I've actually created a Notion document that has a list of like 17 coaches that people have referred to me or that I can vouch for either directly or indirectly. And so there's been times when I'm like, oh, you know, RadReads has this kind of introspective feel to it. It attracts people that like it sells coaching services. But there could be something else to do in the realm of coaching, like a coaching directory or a coaching chatbot or a coaching, you know. And so like where, if I have that kernel of an idea, where would you go from there kind of in these, like in this world of internet data sources?
Yeah. And I should start by saying, I think actually you starting with a space that you know and have some intuition around is actually really helpful because often people are like, oh, I'm just gonna like go and use these tools and like dream up some super niche business that I have no affiliation with. And that can work, but it's also equally important to note that like any business typically comes from like a deep fascination with something, right? Or like a deep yearning to understand something. And so like, since you're already in the coaching space, I mean, some tools that come to mind are like, there are a few tools like Answer the Public or Also Asked. And those are really nice because those literally hinge on all the questions that people are already asking Google. So there's other SEO tools like Ahrefs, which are a little broader. It's extremely powerful, but if you focus in the two tools I just mentioned, they're specifically around questions, right? And I think in this coaching sphere, that would be really helpful because you could just start with a very simple question like you said, like, how do I find a coach? But then you'll probably find, I haven't checked this myself because we're talking on the fly, but like, I bet you would find a bunch of different additional questions of like, how do I find a coach that doesn't do X? Or like, why does my coach do Y? Or like, how should I think about pricing my coaching practice, right? Like all of these different adjacent questions. And by the way, for all of these tools, you can start with something. And then as it gives you these other offshoots, you can click into those offshoots and be like, okay, now we're talking about pricing. Like, here are the, you know, 20 questions that people ask about coaching pricing. And so that's one set of tools I would start with, especially if you're just in that ideation phase of trying to understand what is someone who has any sort of interest in coaching, whether they're on the coaching side or on the like person using a coach side, what do they care about? What are they confused by? What don't they like? And that's a very, very quick way, you know, people say like you should create a business around a problem that people have. It's a very quick way to understand the problems that people have. It's also a very quick way to see how people compare different things. So, for example, if you're looking at a particular kind of product, and this might apply to coaching, I'm not sure, you can very quickly in those tools see, okay, like these are their top five competitors because people are constantly like X versus Y. And what's interesting about that is that often in these tools, you can pick up on what I call indirect competitors, which is not just like, you know, if I'm looking at a functional mushroom drink, I'm not only curious about the functional mushroom drinks out there, but also all of the different drinks or supplements that people might also take or compare, like an AG1, for example. And you see that in the search data because, again, people's minds aren't constrained into like a specific product category and instead what they're looking to fix. Right. So you might see the same thing with coaching where it's they're not only comparing to coaches or they're talking about therapy. Maybe they're talking about like ice baths. I don't know, like different modalities for fixing
meditation,
whatever. Right. That they're. And by the way, for all of this, the benefit is that none of this is hypothetical. These are searches people are doing. And you can also see the volume. Right. So you can see like how much of an issue, how long tail is this thing. So those are that's one area that, you know, I would probably start. The other area, which is slightly different, but similar mechanics is Reddit, right? And so Reddit has all of these different subreddits out there. And it's like one of the biggest sites in the world. So what I often get excited by are things that you would expect to be very niche subreddits that are, I will say like not so niche, like just like surprisingly big. And so there are tools, I'm just going to pull it up for my own. There's this one tool that I love, which is this like Reddit map. Where you can enter anything. And so I bet coaching is in here. It's created by this guy. His last name is Anbaka. And so it's got this like really strange URL. But the thing I love about this tool, and I can send you the link in.
We'll put them in the show notes for everyone.
Is again, you can start here with something really broad like coaching. And then what it does is based on the people that post in coaching, that also post in other subreddits, you get to see all of the related categories. And the thing I like about this is you often get a sense of the almost like different spheres around this central topic. And so in this case, it seems like there's, you know, there's like a node to do with leadership. There's a node to do with career and sports. In this case, it seems like actually in the case of Reddit, like this coaching subreddit is more about like athletic coaching or like some of like more prescriptive coaching. But I wonder if we instead
like life coaching.
Yeah. So there's like r/life coach or life coaching, which is a little smaller, but you can also, by the way, for any of these, see if you just double click into any of them, you get, it kind of like refreshes and you get to see, the little sphere of that space. And then you can use, once you find a subreddit that you think is interesting, you can use tools like Gummy Search or subreddit stats to then go and see like the top posts within that category. And that's a really nice place because if you just think about Reddit, Google is one thing, but Reddit is like a closed community. There are certain guidelines or mods. And so this is a place where like, it's like a true community where people are coming together and certain themes crop up more often than others. And so that's like a really nice place sometimes to be like, oh, like this is clearly a problem within, you know, this set of people who care about this thing. So I think those are two places I would start.
Yeah. Oh, you've given me so many ideas. First, I think, are you familiar with an older investor named Peter Lynch?
I'm just like a financial investor.
Yeah, right? He's a financial investor. And his whole thing was, it was to invest in industries that you know about. And so, you know, if you're really into sneakers, like pay attention to all the different sneaker brands and all that. So it's like the boomer version of this. It's like you pay attention to more of the things that you care about. And I remember when we had Noah Kagan on the podcast, he said, you know, I see all the time these, you know, someone who's a software engineer and then, you know, finds some idea and says like, oh, I should go make like women's skincare. Like maybe there's an opportunity in women's skincare, but you're probably not the right person to do that. Yeah. So just something to keep in mind. The other thing that as you were talking, it reminded me, what's the jobs to be done framework? Mm-hmm. And for our listeners who aren't familiar, jobs to be done is a way of thinking about people's problems as you create different products and offerings. So for example, if there's coaching, the job that coaching is, it's like, what's the job that coaching is trying to do? And so it might be the job is to make you a better leader, or the job is to reduce your anxiety. But if your job is to reduce your anxiety, then you might actually be competing not only against like coaches and therapists, but you might actually be competing against alcohol, or you might be competing against antidepressants or whatever. Pick, like, it, anxiety could be a lot of vices, right? And so it's interesting to hear you describe like the different layers of bubbles, because the first place my brain went was like, oh, this is very much like it can help with the jobs to be done type approach to analyzing, like, why does your product even need to exist?
Yeah. I think some of these tools just really, like, to your point, uncover things where, like, even if you are in a space, you might not just, like, might not be able to effectively surface what the masses in that space think. And I have one example where we did this, like, live session in our first week of the cohort in Internet Pipes. And, like, I just got people to go down these random rabbit holes. And one of them went to like r/marathon, I think. And it was all these marathon runners. And then they put that through some of these tools that I just mentioned, where you can kind of surface the top posts or like recurring themes or issues. And like, apparently marathon runners, they just like, I mean, it's unsurprising when you hear it, but they need to figure out how to pee. And so there's this like, they're like going down this interesting rabbit hole of like adult diapers. And like, I think that the key takeaway is, again, like, we could follow our intuition. And by the way, sometimes our intuition is right and you will not find supporting data online. And sometimes you just need to pursue that inkling. However, I think it is really, really helpful when you can instead not just rely on one brain, but many brains and surface like what is actually happening here? And to your point, I bet if you did enough of this like audience research around coaching, like I bet some of those vices that you just mentioned around like alcohol or like infidelity or whatever would come up. And like that nuance that you get from these communities, I think can be different to some of the keyword research, but I also bet some of that would show up there too.
Yeah. And also an even like simpler way, you know, we talked about ideas, we said business ideas in to frame this conversation, but the way you're describing this is actually, and it makes perfect sense if you know your background in detail, but this is another place to come up with things to write about.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't have to launch a coaching business based on the questions. And again, it's like one of the tools that one of the approaches that they tell you very early when you start writing on the internet is answer a question people have, right?
Yeah. And I think really like these tools, as I said, to your point, it's like, it's not just about starting a business. It's about just pure interest. And like the best writing comes when you are like pleasantly surprised by something or angered by something, or like there's like a true emotion there. And I think the more I've gone down these rabbit holes, like sometimes they amount to absolutely nothing. But every so often, like you really just do find something that you're surprised by. Like, again, you're like, how on earth is this, like, this is kind of a silly example, but this like subreddit called r/TV too high. It's got like, I don't remember how many, but a ton, let me look it up right now, a ton of subscribers. And I'm like, this is, you know, this is silly in a way. But
explain what it is, because I think that people are going to fully get it.
It is a subreddit of just people who are upset that their TV or someone's TV is too high. And so it's just all these pictures of people who like take a picture, I guess, like at a friend's house or something, or a family member's house, that are just like Reddit, please tell me, like, please validate this thought that this TV is too high. And this subreddit has 184,000 subscribers as of me checking right now. And so I think coming back to the idea, it's like every so often you'll just find something online if you go down these rabbit holes. And especially if you're using the tools that have some sort of like affirmation feedback cycle, where it's like, this isn't just something randomly surfaced. This is something that, you know, 180,000 people have subscribed to. Or if you're on something like Hacker News, you're like, this is what 3,000 people decided to upvote. I think that tends to surface something that, not always, but again, sometimes you're just like truly like surprised by. Yeah. And sometimes some of the best writing comes from that, because it kind of, in connecting with your own brain and your own anecdotes, like something surfaces that you feel you have to say.
I have a confession. I have a TV that is too high. And I saw that thread because you posted it on Twitter. And I'm like, fuck, that's me. And the reason why, and then I went down the rabbit hole, is because a lot of times people have that problem is because they have a fireplace. And yeah. so they mount the TV above the fireplace, but they have a high fireplace. Mm-hmm. And so then there's like all these like swivels and all,
right.
Like,
there's
all
actual
this
products
shit.
That people have designed because it's like I guess a pretty widespread issue. And by the way, this is the kind of thing where, as I've said several times, it's like there doesn't always have to be yeah. a business. However, there's like so many examples of just simple realizations. And one of them, like in Internet Pipes, is just the realization that tech is so widespread now that whenever a popular gadget, you know, tops the charts, that doesn't mean like 1,000 people or tens of thousands of people own this thing. It means millions of people, often hundreds of millions of people. And if you go to the total upper echelon, you're talking billions, right? But like that is actually, you know, that's an interesting realization, but you could also say actionable in the sense that like if you look on something like a Jungle Scout and you take the top gadgets from a website like Gadget Flow, well then if you look at all of the accessories that come with any new gadget that again like the true masses are now engaging with, like that is actually an opportunity. Again, I'm not saying that like someone pursuing would be successful, but there's all of these offshoots where you just start to like piece together these different puzzle pieces that you're seeing from around the web. And all of a sudden, as I mentioned before, you go from being like opportunistically poor where you're like, I don't know how people come up with ideas to just seeing the simplest thing ever. Like, oh, what's this new gadget? Like it's trending everywhere. Doesn't mean that I'm going to go compete directly with Apple Vision Pro, but like, what are the offshoots of this? I think some of that starts to come a little more naturally.
Yeah. I love that point about this, like the tiniest sliver, because we refined our coaching product to basically be, it's mostly aimed at people leaving financial services and it's director level up. So it's basically coaching for people looking to leave a job that make over $500,000. Like that seems at its surface a very, very small niche, but just take like, it's still a lot of people for a two-person organization, right?
No, it's a lot. And how many people, so like that's a great example as well of like how many people work in like the big four consulting.
Yeah.
How many people work at these finance firms? It's like, I don't know the exact number, but it's a lot, right?
It's probably like, like 500,000 maybe.
Right.
Maybe probably more. Millions probably if you take like, you know, smaller banks and all that. And yeah, so you could take 0.0001% of that and have a massive business.
Yeah.
You know, massive exactly. small business.
Yeah.
So it is true. I do love that. I also spend a lot of time. I do a version of this in a very simple way, but I have a few of my favorite subreddits around like money and the psychology of money. So it's usually around like financial independence, FIRE, which I'm like a very not anti, but I think
anything can be taken too far. And sometimes exactly. just as we were talking about at the very outset before we went live, I think it's just sometimes the branding around certain ideas as well.
Totally. And so I go to FIRE and then I'll just look at the most popular posts every in the past month. And I just do that every month. And it surfaces up all these ideas.
Right.
And some of them are just like, some of them turn into tweets. Others turn into like a 5,000 word essay. Some of them like turn into frameworks for coaching. It's just like, and it's because the people tell you what they care about, but the niche is so like, there's a FIRE, it's called Fat FIRE, which is basically people who want to be financially independent in like the coasts, like in
and
expensive.
Live well. Yeah.
And live well. Yeah. So I would be considered fat FIRE, I guess.
Yeah.
And then there's Barista FIRE, which is like, you want to do it on like a shoestring budget. So I don't even read Barista FIRE because it has nothing to do with the world that I care about and the people that read my writing. But Fat FIRE, that is like either you are Fat FIRE or you're aspiring to Fat FIRE. But Fat FIRE itself, you could probably pull it up. It probably has half a million followers.
Well, I was just pulling it up to your point because I was like, every time I hear of a space like this with FIRE, that's really like, it's not just a single community. It's kind of taken a life on its own. Like you said, there's all these offshoots. I love looking up those communities on this map because I think I'm almost always surprised by like the kind of offshoots and how many there are. And so to your point, so FIRE itself has 400,000 subscribers. Wow. And then there's Fat FIRE with almost the same amount, 393. Wow. There's Expat FIRE with 57,000. Coast FIRE. There's Barista FIRE, like you said. There's Fiery Femmes, Poverty FIRE, Europe Fire. There's, and those are all just the ones with fire in it. Then there's like an offshoot that kind of has a singular node called Overemployed, which directs to a bunch of other things.
Wow.
There's a kind of economics section where you see ETFs, dividends, value investing, day trading, fidelity investments, Wall Street bets, etc. Then you see a real estate sector that's connected. So you see real estate investing, first-time home buyer, realtors, commercial real estate. And you can, so you kind of get the like the color around someone who cares about FIRE, what else they might be interested in.
Yeah.
And then you go a level deeper to your point. Once you find a community or several that you feel like are kind of reminiscent of the kind of people you're trying to reach or work with, you get to see their like true problems, like the things they talk about, they're confused about, they're emotional about. And I also, I do the same thing where there's a few subreddits I'll just go to every so often. One of them is just Data is Beautiful. And there it's just like,
that
it's just like that one's like less specific to an industry, but more so just like, it's one of the top, I think, 30 or so subreddits out there. And it's like, what better source of information is there where there's like truly tens of thousands of people that have needed to upvote something in order for it to reach me in this instant where I'm visiting this site? It's like that is so much more, you know, signal than your traditional moment on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. So we've pivoted away from business ideas, or we went on a small tangent to content ideas. I want to ask you, Steph. So you and I, you know, I have made an entire life for myself writing, being online, writing. I've been online for a long time, but writing publicly 9 years now, and evolving into YouTube and fun stuff. I can't imagine my life without the just like showing up online, right? In so many different ways. I think a lot of our listeners, and you have another course called Content Done Right, which we'll link to as well. But I think a lot of people now are listening to us and they'll say like, oh, but you guys started, you know, you started 10, 15 years ago. I started 9 years ago. And to be fair, it's a very different, like if you want to put stuff online right now, it's very different than it was 9 years ago, or there's so many more channels. People are so much better. Like the competition is so much better. You have opinion about that. And it feels very saturated. Like, what do you tell someone listening that's like, yeah, you know, I have a job. I want to start testing out some of these ideas, but it just feels so noisy. I don't have, like, I'm starting from ground zero here. And tell us about the chuckle on the competition.
Yeah. So I have several thoughts. So first, I think, yes, it is more competitive than ever. But every day, some new YouTube channel is minted, some TikTok star is minted, some blog even. You know, a lot of people think blogs are dead. And when I say minted, I don't just mean started. I mean, like, there is some YouTube channel
certified
that everyone thought was too late to the game that has proven that concept wrong. And I think that's actually the idea behind, like, some of the tools within Internet Pipes applied to content, where it's like, yes, it's more competitive because more people are participating, but you also have more tools than ever to not just create the content, but to actually see what people want. And by the way, I'm not saying this people should all go this way because I think it's a little lazy, but some Twitter accounts are literally founded on the idea of going to Reddit, seeing what trends in certain communities, and then reposting it with their own commentary. And often that commentary, by the way, is based on the top comments on those posts, because again, those are all affirmed by the collective community. So again, I think that's kind of a lazy approach, but the point is that, one, I don't think it's too late, and two, I think there's more resources than ever. However, I think where people do go wrong is twofold. One is, I think they like show up and they're just like, I want to create content, and they have no idea why, or they don't have any actual passion behind what they're doing or what they're trying to say. And for that reason, they end up going really broad, right? They end up talking about like startups, technology, fashion, travel,
productivity.
That's all fine. Like, I've commented on some of those topics and I don't think there's a problem necessarily with that. But I think the internet is incredible because it's actually allowed us to not do that, right? Yep. And the example I give that actually kind of ties together both of my points about it not being too late and the fact that you can go really niche, and niche no longer means small, is this YouTube channel called Travel Alone Idea, which is just Japanese passenger trains. It was started in 2021. So that's 2 years ago. I'm just pulling it up right now. And it's got, let's see, 1.5 million subscribers. But here's the thing. It's only posted 30 videos ever. Wow. Those videos have thousands of comments. Their top videos have millions of views. And these are not fake views. Like you see in the comments, like a bunch of people who are just very excited about these videos, who are watching them to the end. And the best part about this, by the way, is if you watch these videos, they're not like what you mentioned about like competition and everyone's kind of ahead of you and they all know the hacks and they've all like gone the extra mile. Yeah, exactly. They are. So one, there's no narration. There's what? Only, you know, wait, light
what,
edits.
Can you describe what
it's literally someone
like?
Going around these Japanese passenger trains and just showing people what it's like. And these videos are, you know, 10 to 20, maybe 25 minutes at the longest end, but around like 10 to 12 minutes. And it's just them showing what it's like. There's no narration. The cuts are limited. There's like calming music in the background. Their thumbnails, by the way, are just like a shot of the train and like one just red arrow. I'll send you the channel in the
chat.
Yeah,
we'll put it in.
That's an example of where I think like creating content is not just about like showing up and creating content because it's my day to create a newsletter or a YouTube channel or whatever. Like this person had an inkling that they love Japanese passenger trains and that other people might as well. And I'm sure, by the way, if they went down the rabbit hole or suite of tools that I've mentioned, they would see, oh, actually a lot of people are like searching for this there's a lot of questions around this thing. Or like if they looked on, you know, particular sites that sell these tickets, they're like, oh, wow, they're getting a lot of traffic. So there probably would have been indicators. But I think this is an example of where I absolutely don't think it's too late. But what I will say about, you know, I said there's two things that people get wrong. One of them is that they often go too broad. The other thing that they often do is they don't think about like how something is done. And I know that's really simplistic. Mm-hmm. They sometimes think about the tactics and like you said, they like Mr. Beastify their videos. But if you think about why people like content, and this is true across YouTube, it's true across newsletters, Twitter accounts, etc. Most of the time, it's actually how someone communicates. And so if you think about your favorite newsletters, if you were to tell someone why they're your favorite, it would never be because, I really like that they talk about travel. I really like they talk about productivity, because there's like endless versions of that, right? That is not how they're differentiating. But often what you will say is like, I love like the infographics in this one. It's so visual, so beautiful. I love how this person's so funny. I love how this person's so candid, so deeply researched, etc. And by the way, this applies to YouTube videos as well, where this person, like they know the kind of person who's interested in Japanese passenger trains is actually not looking for the Mr. Beast version of this, right? They're looking for the calm, like soothing. I'm like laying in bed, ready to go to sleep. Like I just want something to like clear my mind where I can dream about Japan and chill. And so that, it sounds really simplistic, but the how you do something, I think, is where so many people go wrong. And like, they find themselves lost 2 years into content where they're just like, I don't know why I'm not standing out. And I'm like, could you actually articulate what is different about your content? Not what it is, but how it is written, how it's communicated, how it's reaching people. Yeah. And the final thing I'll say on that is like, this is so important, partially because of the way people, as I just said, like tell people about something, right? If you don't give them anything to grasp onto, why would they share it? And even if they like it, it's like, how would they share it, right? They would have nothing to say about how it's different or be able to articulate that to someone else.
Yeah. And, you know, as you're saying that, Steph, one thing one appreciation I have for you that I've subconsciously had, but it became much more clear, is that you've been, you know, how long have you been on Twitter? Like 12 years, maybe 10 years?
No. So a lot of people think that because I guess I had a Twitter account maybe in like high school or junior high, but I've actually only been tweeting since like 2018. So around 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. But you've been, my point is you've been creating, you've been writing, you've been online for a while. And then you don't pigeonhole yourself to one topic. Right. Because if you go to your blog, there's stuff on like coding and languages and travel and remote work. And if you go to your Twitter account, there's stuff on random trends, TVs that are too high, you know, like cool stuff happening in tech. And I think it's I think about this often because I was like more focused in productivity probably the last, especially when we were selling productivity courses. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that it was making me miserable. because it, to like to have to show up with this one idea and cut it every way, you know, seven ways till Sunday and say it like a slightly different way. And also just like when you do something for 9 years for me, like you outgrow it. Like it just stops being interesting to you. And I've always said, like, I want to, like, creating on the internet is going to be something that I'm going to do for, like, the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. Like, I could see myself being, like, a really old guy at, a retirement home who was, like, who can't walk, really. I'd be like, yeah, but I really want to share this idea because it's, like, so interesting to, like, I really believe because it's such a part of who I am and how I connect with people. And this point about injecting your voice in it and also like not being too broad. It's like, I do think I'm like, I see these people that, you know, they do the productivity, they do 9 versions of the same tweet every week. I'm like, you're either living in a hell that you didn't
they're
sign
trapped.
Up for.
They're
you're trapped.
Trapped.
Or, and usually they're just scared to
well, that's what I mean. It's the equivalent that maybe some people could resonate with if they're not like a Twitter person is like, they've become the artist that had one hit album and then forever recreated that album. And they're like 8 albums in. And it's like, they're too far in that they've convinced themselves partially because they've gone so far down that track that they can't do anything else. And that their audience only wants to hear that from them. And in a way, because they've trained their audience around only hearing those things, that is all the audience wants from them.
Yeah.
But that, you know, if you take Twitter for an example, this comes from a lot of the like very basic advice, you know, the like frameworks that people apply to content where they're like, you know, be consistent, like become the like it guy or it girl for something. And like, there's some justification around some of that guidance, but it's very short-term thinking.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that I mentioned earlier, it's been really nice to have a full-time job along this whole journey is because I've never had to be short-term minded.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky to do that, but that is really like people get trapped that way. And I think, you know, not calling anyone out in particular, but I've seen creators where I literally like, I watch what they create. And in a way, some people might say, oh, that person's really successful. I know they're making, you know, insert number of figures here, but I see them and I feel really sad because I'm like, you are trapped. You don't feel like you can create anything else because you've conditioned yourself and your audience to only believe that you can talk about one thing versus if you start early on kind of having people, this is going to sound really conceited, but having people want to hear from you, like, what are your interests? Let me, you know, like, let me come along for your ride stuff, not necessarily just to hear about women in tech, for example. Like that was like, that was like a thread that I pulled on earlier that I don't really comment on as much, for example.
Yeah.
Same thing goes with like, I used to be a digital nomad and like, I still really love traveling and believe in digital nomadism and remote work, but that's not maybe as central because I'm in a different phase of life. And so I think you have to, if you're someone like you and I who want to continue doing this for a very long time, you have to have that time scale in mind when you're thinking through like the kind of person you want to show up as.
Beautiful stuff. Well, you have given us so much. I always leave all of our conversations like so inspired, which is why I was so honored to have you on the podcast. So I'm just super grateful for you.
Thanks.
And you really are such a unique person. And I'm super grateful to be your friend.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I'm happy to be that we're friends as well. And like I said, not just online, in real life too.
Exactly. So tell us, we'll put all the links in the show notes and in the description, but where can people go learn about you and Internet Pipes, your podcast? Where tell us where you can be found, where you want to be found.
So my website is stephsmith.io, where you can find almost all my projects. I haven't added Internet Pipes there, but you can find Internet Pipes at internetpipes.com. That's my latest project. And I am on Twitter at StephSmith.io. And if people made it this far, happy to include like a discount code. I'm definitely not trying to use this to push anyone to
go
buy
for it.
But I haven't created one, but we can put it in the show notes.
We'll put it in the show notes for sure.
I'm always very interested, by the way. I love doing these things and just having something at the very end because then you can see how many people it's like I don't need to like talk about a discount code at the front when no one knows anything. But it's like if people made it this far, maybe they're interested.
Awesome. Yeah, Colin and Samir, they always on their videos, they're like, if you made it to the deep end,
Yeah,
put in there. There's always like a different emoji. They're like, put drop us, and you just like go in the comments and you see the emojis
Like
people who made it to the deep end. So I agree. It is a special. If you're listening this far, we honor you, we salute you, and we see you. So
you're in the deep end. I love that. That's so clever.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks, Steph.
Thank you.